Welcome to the College Parent Central podcast. Whether your child is just beginning the college admission process or is already in college, this podcast is for you. You'll find food for thought and information about college and about navigating that delicate balance of guidance, involvement, and knowing when to get out of the way. Join your hosts, Vicki Nelson and Lynn Abrahams, as they share support and a celebration of the amazing experience of having a child in college.
Welcome to the College Parent Central podcast. This is the place where we talk about parenting college students before college, during college, after college. It's the parenting role that we're here to talk about. My name is Lynn Abrahams, and I am a learning disability specialist. I've been working in higher ed for many years. Sometimes I say how many, and sometimes I don't. Because it's a lot. And I'm here both with my friend and colleague, Vicki Nelson, and a special guest. But first, let me introduce Vicki.
Well, I'll introduce myself.
Yes.
That's okay. My name is Vicki Nelson, and I am a college professor of communication. I've also served several years as a director of academic advising. And I am the mother of three grown daughters. So I come to this college parent topic as a professional, as an advisor, and also as a parent, having lived through it and here to let everyone know that you can survive it and you can move on. And we began this podcast from a workshop. We like to talk to parents, and we have a wonderful opportunity today to talk to someone who is particularly going to be helpful, I think, for those who are beginning the process and starting to think about college. So, Lenny, you also, I talked about my girls. You have the boys.
I have two boys. So between the two of us, we cover it. And we can say that you live through it. It does happen. They go to college, come through the other end, and we're still standing, hopefully. I do want to introduce our special guest today. We're thrilled to have Dr. Aviva Leggett here to speak with us. She is the author of a new book. It's called Get Real, Get In, How to Get Into the College of Your Dreams by Being Your Authentic Self. Dr. Leggett has been in higher education in the field for over 15 years. She's respected as a trusted authority in the field. She's the founder of Ivy Insight, which is a boutique college admission consulting firm. And she is an in-demand leadership and college admissions speaker. She's been hailed by the New York Times as a trustworthy expert on the college admission process and is also recognized as an expert in corporate culture and diversity in her work as a faculty member for Coursera. I think I pronounced that right, Coursera, and the University of Pennsylvania. Welcome, Dr. Aviva Leggett.
Thank you
so much for being here.
It's good to be here, and it's great to talk with fellow parents. I'm a parent of two boys myself, so the sun's covered.
Yep.
Okay. I'm the outlier with the girls, but that's all right.
Yeah. Well, you know, we all have stories of our children that we're drawing on, that's for sure. Aviva, I think we want to start by asking you a little bit about your own personal journey. And how did you get into this whole field of college counseling? How did you get to the place where you wrote this book?
Thank you for that. That's a great question for me to introduce myself and my background. I became interested in the college process when I was a kid, going through it myself. So I was in a bit of a strange position. My family was not high income by any stretch, but they moved to a really nice affluent district, which was in Princeton, New Jersey, right where the university was. And so I was surrounded with this very high achieving, high college going culture that I had not been previously exposed to. And my parents didn't really have the ability to get me extra help to navigate this process, which is, you know, so daunting for students and parents, as I'm sure you can attest, having, you know, gone through it with your own kids. And so I put a lot of pressure on myself, you know, I think, you know, to try to fit in with this culture and to try to figure out, you know, where did I belong? And so in sophomore year, I decided, I was like, I'm going to go to NYU. And it made sense to me at the time because I had an artistic background. So I wanted to be in a place where there was a lot of art and music. And I decided that I wanted to study music business. And there was a specific program at NYU that I could attend. So I was like, I'll be in New York City. I'll be doing music. And business is, you know, something practical. So I'm not just, you know, studying theater or something that, you know, people might see as not achieving a goal. Although, you know, I don't believe that now. But that was my thinking at the time. And so I did basically everything I could to try to get into NYU. I went to every information session that they, you know, possibly offered in New York City at my school. And my dad and my grandfather had gone there as well. And my dad, you know, actually was able to find one of his old professors who was still teaching there. And that person was so generous, it actually took us into his home for the day. So it was, you know, just like, it was a journey. It was like, NYU was like everything to me when I was a kid. And I don't know what I would have done if I did not get in early decision, because I was just, I staked so much hope and so much promise with that getting in. And so I did get in, but that wasn't the point. The point was really, you know, I went through this kind of, I didn't mention, I got pneumonia right before I had to turn in my applications because I, you know, just the magnitude of the stress I was experiencing at the time. So despite my, you know, sort of, you know, ill-taken journey, I got a lot of good out of the journey of applying to college because it helped me to set goals, figure out how to achieve them, and starting to acculturate into this collegiate life, both through where I was in my high school being right near Princeton University, as well as, you know, sort of exposing myself to NYU was really helpful for me and impactful. So when I went to college, I discovered that there was a field called higher education that I could go into and, you know, specifically to work in or around admissions or something in that area. But I had on this on my shoulder, even when I was a kid, I was thinking like, I would love to help people with this process. I'm invested in it so many hours. I'd love to help people with this. So this was a thought I had even as a kid. And a thought that had continued through my mind when I came to University of Pennsylvania for grad school. I got my master's and my doctorate there in the field of higher education. And I worked full-time there as Senior Associate Director of Admissions, where I served on freshman and transfer committees and oversaw academic initiatives and pre-college programs. So when I was finishing up my doctorate, I had sort of a fork in the road for my career. I could have stayed, but I had felt compelled to do something different. And this admissions piece was still driving at me from all these years, from, you know, since, let's say, 15 to, you know, age 30 something, right? Like for a long time. And I felt like I should do something with that. So that was what drove me to found Ivy Insight. And I've been working with students and families from all over the world since then for the last 8 years, and had a chance to write for Forbes, and then most recently put out my book. And my book is really designed to speak to the kid like me, who's like maybe a little bit lost, doesn't know exactly what they want to do, but maybe like has an idea of where they would go, and just helps them to double down on what they love in a good way. Cause I think that's something that I did really well in my college process, was like, I was like, okay, I got to figure out what I like. I got to figure out like where would be best for me to go. And this was a very helpful motivator for me and a driver for me. And I think that the college journey can be a healthier driver for others. You know, and then of course, recognizing that there is a lot of stress and responsibility to manage in it as well. And my book really also encourages students to sort of pay attention to themselves and what's inside, and also take into account the fact that your environment is influencing you. You know, you have your parents, you have your school, mm-hmm. you have all these people who are kind of invested in your process and invested in your journey as you're going through high school. So sort of to make sure to tune into what is good and tune out what's not working for you, right? And so my book is really designed to help kids sort of approach the process in a little bit of a different way, to help them research colleges in a more intentional way. Allows them to get to know the campuses, that allows them to build relationships and rapport with people on campus before they go, to really start to get indoctrinated or enculturated into that collegiate life before they go, because that's actually going to give them a much better sense of where they fit than if they don't bother really immersing themselves in the college experience in some way before they apply. So
that's an amazing journey. And, I think you're unusual in deciding very early that you want to go into higher education. That's something that often students stumble into, and don't even think in terms of, wait, there are all these people on this campus that are working here. There must be jobs there. So that's wonderful. And I want to talk more about your book, but I want to back up a little bit, because you also founded Ivy Insight, which is a college admissions consulting firm. And, I think that there are a lot of families. We know that this admissions process is a family process, and there are a lot of families that have worked with college counselors. And then there are others who haven't. And not everyone may be as familiar with what that is. So I wonder if you could just fill in a little bit, what is a college, a private college counselor, and how is that different than the high school guidance counselor?
Sure. So I'll just preface this by saying that, every private college counselor or consulting firm is going to have their own take or philosophy on the process. So if a parent is searching for a college consulting firm, it's really important to align your philosophy around your child's college search and selection that with the firm. So I would never say as a blanket statement, like everyone needs a college counselor, because like everyone needs a different kind of college counselor if they need one. So some students have a very straightforward process, or maybe they're applying to community college and they just need some support on forms. Other people may just want help on essays. And other people, like the people that I work with, want a more comprehensive mentorship ahead of the college process, as well as a lot of support during the process. So for the students who work with my firm, what they're looking for is help discovering what I call the college admissions X factor. That stands for experience and expertise and exponential impact. So my hope is that every student that I work with creates some meaningful project, program, initiative that is, delivers a positive return, not only to the student, but to many people around them. So whether it's founding an oyster gardening project, or conducting research, or writing a book, every student is ideally doing something that's of great meaning and also helps them to figure out what their goals are. So that's what my firm really specializes in, is helping kids figure out what they want to do by encouraging them to complete these projects and supporting them through that. Other people may just say, like, I know kind of where I want to go, I just need some help with essays. So some firms do that. I think the benefit in general of having a private college counselor versus just a school counselor, and school counselors are amazing. And so this is no, and it's like unfortunate that a lot of people don't see the mutual value in the different functions, because I think everybody has an important role to play and supporting the child. And I think that if we think about it that way, hopefully people would collaborate better. But, essentially, I think school counselors are really great at helping a student understand what the outcomes are from that high school. So in other words, what's the history of acceptance from this high school to the different colleges that the student is looking at. So they can give a really good history of that and help the student with their list, and you'll give some consultation on that. Oftentimes people do want or need a private counselor because it's sort of like going to the gym. Like if you go to the gym and you could go regularly on your own and like work out and get a good workout, like you might be able to use your school counselor for, you know, for some help if you just want like an essay check here or like just a question, quick question there. But the reality is a lot of students need kind of like personal training to go through this process, and so do their parents, because like there's a lot of information that's inundated. The process is very complicated. There are a lot of important and high stakes decisions to be made if you're applying to highly selective schools. And so people don't necessarily like want to be using like all this, you know, dangerous gym equipment like on their own. Like they want some help to figure out like, how do I use this equipment? And, you know, how do I get sort of the best workout possible? So I know it's kind of a silly analogy, but it's sort of a like one that I can think of that might help someone wrap their head around, like, what is the difference, right? So you're not with the school counselor. You have to remember the school counselor is looking out, like, not just for your child, but for every child in the school, because that's their job. They're not going to help your child figure out how to differentiate themselves from other children who are applying. They're not going to necessarily provide a lot of hands-on support for the essays, although some schools do have more resources for essays than others do. So it's really just a matter of, you know, how much support you can get at your school and what gaps you feel you need to fill in. But I think that there's a value for most people who are applying to highly selective schools to get some form of consulting.
You know, you're absolutely right about high school guidance counselors. I mean, the work they do is wonderful, but they're completely overwhelmed. They often are responsible for 200, 300, 500 students, and it's how they do what they do is amazing. So having a couple of partners makes sense. And, you know, I want to go to your book a little bit. And as a private counselor and a consulting firm, you probably could sit down and write a book that has all the formulas and all the tips. You've worked with all the students, you know what works and what doesn't, and have that book. But that's not what your book is. So, you know, getting that yes from the admissions office involves more than just those formulas and tips. Can you talk a little bit about how your book is different?
Sure. Well, I think that my book is like really designed to do what you say in a way, but it sort of comes at it from the reverse. So it's just asking the student to take the onus and take the responsibility to understand these colleges and like really get inside their head versus like it being a one-way thing where it's like, oh, just the college is evaluating me, but I'm not evaluating them in any kind of important way, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just assuming that whatever they're sharing publicly is the whole story, and I want them because they're, you know, such and such on such and such rankings, and so on. So I think, you know, I do believe there are, you know, there are tactical elements to the college process that can be leveraged. For example, students can be creative about what majors they choose, to think more broadly about what they might study, because most students have not been exposed to collegiate majors. And this is one of the value adds, you know, that we like to provide in our firm, is to help people understand, like, what are these majors and what kinds of subjects are included in these majors, you know, because the reality is that you see kids apply to things they know. They apply to business, engineering, pre-medicine, nothing wrong with those majors, by the way, but they just don't know any other thing. So that means all the applications are concentrated in these, let's say, call them three, there's more than that, three, but let's just say these top three areas. And then it leaves all the others kind of not there, right? So there's not a lot of, you know, anthropology majors. There's not as many logic majors, right? So there are, you know, levers like that that you can look at, tactical things that are strategic to help position or differentiate one candidate from the next, because you're going to be competing with a lot of people, right? If you don't choose a more personalized major. So that's a really important feature, I would say, to anyone applying, is just to think about that. And I do share that in the book as well. I don't believe that is the best way to help young people by just giving them like a map, because mm-hmm. I just think that everybody has a very individualized way of learning, and everybody has different interests. I know, you know, Lynn, you work with students with learning differences. So right. Like those kids have their own journey, which is different from somebody else's journey.
Absolutely. Every student seems to have their own, path, which is fast. This is why it's fun to work with students, because everybody has to find their own way, which is pretty cool.
Exactly. But certainly there are, students really need to know these universities, right, to figure out the best way to approach their essays. Mm-hmm. So if they don't know the universities, they're going to have a generic, persuasive argument for every university that's not going to fly at every university. You have mm-hmm. to personalize mm-hmm. it. So if I were to turn my book into a how-to guide, I think it could, it could be useful that way, but I just think it's not as fun. I don't think mm-hmm. St. Martin's Press would have published that, because there are a lot of guides out there like that already.
Mm-hmm. That kind of brings me to I wanted to ask you why you chose the title that you chose. Why emphasize get real and get in and being authentic? And what do you mean by all of that?
For me, the college journey is really about getting to the core of our motivation, our intrinsic motivation. Mm-hmm. So if parents are encouraging our children down a path that they're not fully bought into, they're likely to fail on that path, right? And so if a child gets real about what they want, they're going to be more intrinsically motivated to follow that path and those goals that they're setting for themselves, and more likely to succeed in whatever path or paths they've chosen, even if those doors close. And as I do have some stories from leaders and who had, doors close at various points and they sort of had to pivot. But if you're at least mm-hmm. going on a path that's fulfilling, even if it stops at a certain point you're not expecting, it's going to be less draining than if you're following a path that someone has prescribed for you where you're not fully bought into what that is. So when I work with kids, I really try to dig into what motivates them and then support them to develop their exponential impact, their X factor around what really motivates them, because that's ultimately what's going to buoy them up mm-hmm. from a competitive standpoint as well.
One of my favorite parts of this book is that you emphasize that students should not try to impress, and that we are stuck. I mean, we often tell our students that you have to set up their resume in a certain way to impress the college folks. And, you talk about something that's called, just the impressiveness paradox. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. And so the idea behind the impressiveness paradox is that if you're trying too hard to make the impression, it may yeah. miss the mark. And really that speaks to the point I was just making earlier, where if you're trying to follow someone else's narrative that you think is the narrative for you, it's going to, come off as disingenuous. Mm-hmm. At the same time, students do need to be strategic about how they present themselves, right? Because the admissions office is going to be reading your application. Unfortunately, it's basically a hot minute, which, translates to, let's say four to 8 minutes like per application. So it's not like you have a lot of time for them to like truly know you deeply. Mm-hmm. But if you know yourself deeply, you can start to articulate the parts of yourself that are just really most important and most significant on your application, to make that easier for somebody who's doesn't know you to just kind of like go through information and be like, wow, like this is a really amazing person, because they've, mm-hmm. They've been able to really achieve that exponential impact, and they know what their college goals are. They know what they want to study, and it's not necessarily something everybody else wants to study, right? So people have to you know, go their own way, I would say, and really do that. The hardest part of the college process is what you do before. And then it's just about like leveraging that in the best way possible when you get there. If you've, you know, done the work to figure out what you want to do, and it doesn't have to be done over years. Like you could literally spend, you know, let's just call it 2 weeks, like an arbitrary timeline. That's a small amount of time, just like really researching colleges and talking to students who are at the college, talking to alumni, speaking with professors, and like just do a deep dive into college life, and then you know, record your impressions of that, and then you can start to refine your goals in such a way where you can, you know, speak the language of the college and really speak to what their needs are and their priorities are, because you're going to understand them for yourself so much better. Versus if you're, you know, comparing yourself to a friend who got into the school you want to get into and you just try to do all the activities that they did. And then, but right. You're like not the president, maybe you're the vice president, or, you know, it's just kind of like a watered down version of somebody who, you know, who got into some other school
to clone yourself into.
Exactly. And a lot of people do that. They're like, oh, well, what did this person do that got into this school? Yeah. And it's like, that's a really bad tactic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Trying to take the template or the formula and just plug in.
Exactly.
There's a related question that I had that you talk about in the book, and I think it has to do with that application and all of that. And you said admissions offices want to know how you operate, not how you perform. And I think that's a really interesting distinction, how you operate rather than how you perform. And I'm wondering if you could, you know, sort of explain that distinction, and how can students demonstrate that?
Sure. So let's assume that you have, the reality is between grade inflation before the pandemic and grade inflation during the pandemic, a lot of kids have really, really good grades, right? So not to say that grades are not important, because they certainly are, but the metric can be diluted depending on the circumstances of the student and the high school. So there's your grades, right? Then some students are opting to take tests, some students are not. I usually encourage people to take the test, because many colleges do consider them, and they make consider them in awarding admission as well as in awarding merit scholarships. So good to take the test if you're able to, and it doesn't impose an undue burden. And then, so let's assume that all those things are checking out really nicely. It's the how you operate, and does it operate in a way that we value at our college, right? So are we looking for more entrepreneurial students? Are we looking for socially active students, people who want to make a social impact? Are we looking for data-driven kids? Like, what kind of students are we looking for? And then does this student have that mindset, right? So that mode of operation that we really value here. So that's where that comes into play in terms of the differentiation piece, that we can speak to how we think as well as what we think.
Yeah. That's a wonderful way for students to think about it, because it adds up to so much more than just checking the right boxes.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm curious about, two things. One is how students find the right fit. You know, we talk a lot about students finding that exact right fit in terms of colleges, not necessarily the best college out there, but the right fit. But then the other question I have is, what if the parents and the students have different ideas about what that right fit is? And what advice would you have for both parents and students about that?
That's such a hard question, because it's a question, I don't mean for me, but just like, it's a hard question for somebody to know the answer to, because, there's the question of how the education will be financed. And most of the times the parents do take the vast majority of the responsibility, or at least half the responsibility for that. Mm-hmm. And when a student applies for financial aid, Unless they're emancipated from their family, that parent's financial information will be used in the evaluation of the award. And so I think it's, you know, with the family, I think it's really hard and depends on the family dynamic, but I think there has to be a conversation about what the priorities are, what the parents are willing to support the student to invest in versus what the student would have to do on their own. I mean, I know of people who, you know, have said, okay, I'll forego your support to get what I want, or they've said, okay, I'll play by your rules. So, you know, I think it's just about being open about what are those deal breakers for each side. And then, you know, how do they want to handle that? And I think for this, it's hard because if parents have a lot of deal breakers, but the student has a different idea, then that student may or may not be in the best position to evaluate, you know, the potential for long-term debt and like what impact on their life it will have, right? So I wouldn't advocate for a student to not work with their parents. I would say if you can find a way to collaborate with your parents in order to come up with criteria that are suitable for both parties, that would be the ideal scenario. But it's certainly not unheard of that, you know, parents will be in one place and students will be in another place. Ultimately, though, students don't need their parents to apply to college unless it's to sign the early decision agreement. So, you know, there for some students who apply early decision, you have to sign a form, and the parent has to sign the form as well about financial responsibility. But in the absence of that, you know, I'm not advocating for this, but again, a kid can in theory apply to wherever they want if they can get their application fees together. So. Yeah.
And yet you're talking about sort of putting all the information on the table and talking together, which I really like. You're talking about like, let's both everybody be honest about what they want and have that discussion. And sometimes we avoid those kind of discussions with our kids. So I think that's a really good point.
Yeah. And I would say in the case of my parents, like it was not, we should have had a better discussion. I think like I made up my mind about NYU and they were just like, we just want to make her happy, but it was a big financial burden for my family and for me to go there. So it wasn't even like a conversation that we had, but we should have had it. And so too should every family have a financial conversation about like how would this impact me? So, you know, online now there are net price calculators for, you know, virtually every institution out there where you can at least get a rough estimate of out-of-pocket costs, loans, and so, you know, you have to have these conversations with your kids about what that would be, what that would look like, in the future, because that is all also helping to educate them as they're going through this process, which is such a big value
into adulthood
of
this
process as well, financial literacy and all of that. So I think that that's an essential part of anyone's college planning is to, if money is an issue for the family and they're not either planning to take on loans or they just can't pay the full thing with cash, then, you know, they should definitely have that conversation about what that impact will look like after graduation.
It does seem as though this process of all of these conversations and all of the negotiations that might happen between students and their parents is a wonderful opportunity for both to get to know each other in a new, more adult kind of way that parents aren't used to thinking about their kids in that way. And kids aren't used to thinking about their parents as humans and with some of these issues. So
they become partners.
Yeah, there are real advantages to the process.
Right. And I see it both ways, right? I see some parents and kids who work great together. And then other times it's just very hard for the kids and the parents to be on the same page. But I will hope as the parent that they would strive and be the leader on the collaboration piece. Like, I don't think you can expect a teenager to collaborate because teens are trying to individuate, right? That's where they are developmentally. But I think the parent can set a good example for the child and kind of insist on some kind of collaboration.
So I work with a lot of or some students who might not be ready for college, and what do you do about that? And how do you talk to parents about that? How do you talk to students about that?
Well, what I typically would advise in that situation is that the student does aim to apply to college. And then for most colleges, you can defer a year after you get in. It's easier to apply when you're a senior in high school because you have access to your guidance counseling office, your teachers. So you can put together an application. So I would just say in that case, you know, hey, like definitely consider some other plans for after high school, but let's apply to college anyway. Mm-hmm. And then you can see where you feel by the end of the year. As I know with COVID, a lot of my kids, and I know this is like widespread in just my group, but a lot of my kids, you know, didn't mature as quickly as past grades. Like they weren't quite ready for these decisions and being responsible for the process. But, you know, with things opening up a little bit more, I'm seeing a lot of quick growth in some of them, you know, so all of a sudden, like a light bulb is going on and they're, you know, getting more in tune with their goals, or they're making progress on something that they had stalled on before. So I think, you know, because kids mature at different rates, you have to give them options and you have to give them time to mature. But also, you know, with the college process, there are certain deadlines that you just have to meet. So if the kid definitely doesn't want to go away for college, just have them apply to some local options. And if they're not sure or they're wavering, have them put in a few applications to different places and then see what happens and what decision is to be made once those offers are in. And then you can always defer for a year.
Great advice.
Yeah.
And then you can use that year to really do whatever you want to, not be spending half of that gap year worrying about applying to college.
Because that's behind you. And hopefully people will have that good choice made and they can go. Of course, they can always reapply if they weren't happy or they realized there was a change, but at least you've got that option on the table already.
Yeah. So I want to think about maybe after that application process, and I'm sure in the work that you've done, you've worked with a lot of students who have actually gotten a no from their dream college. Mm-hmm. They had their dream college and they did everything right and all, but especially if it's a highly selective college, they may receive a no. What do students do then? And then also thinking about parents, what's more helpful or less helpful for parents and students in that situation where now what do I do?
Right. It's really hard. And oftentimes if I see students get rejected from a dream school, it's like they knew it was a dream school. It wasn't necessarily in reach, but the student felt compelled to do it anyway. For other students, when that school is more of a feasible option, I mean, there's no doubt that there's a psychological toll that happens if you get rejected from an opportunity that you staked a lot of hope on. What I advise just to mitigate that possibility is that students complete all their applications before they get that decision back. And that way they're not deterred from applying or from putting their best foot forward on their application. So my best advice is just plan for that possibility. Think of some backup options that feel good and figure out what you really like about that school and try to see how many schools have as much of that, those elements that you enjoy as possible. I mean, there's so much diversity and in the institutions. So very oftentimes there are schools that aren't, you know, the same, but there are features of schools, you know, whether it's an urban environment or a certain academic program that you're drawn to that are going to have really good offerings for those programs. So I've encouraged students to think about like what's really most important about this dream school, and then where else does this like best component of the school? Where else can I find that in other places?
Yeah.
So, do you also work with students who have learning differences? Like, what is your?
I do. Yes. So I wouldn't say that's my top specialty, but I have some students with learning differences that I work with and support. And I also have a child with learning differences. Mm-hmm. So I know that from being a parent as well as from advising students. And, you know, I have resources to help them research disabilities offices. Yep. And that's what I encourage my students to do who have learning differences or learning disabilities, is that they go to those disability services offices on the campuses and research what might the accommodations be for somebody mm-hmm. with my background, and you know, see how those offices respond to that kind of request, because that can give you some indication of how helpful they'll be when you get on campus. So that would be a really important mm-hmm. outreach I would encourage from students and or parents to understand what the accommodations are and compare that with what the student really needs to succeed. Because obviously if a student with learning differences gets to college and doesn't have the supports they need, then they're not mm-hmm. going to succeed necessarily either academically, or they may take longer to complete, which has financial implications. Mm-hmm. There are some really great, you know, programs out there that are being mm-hmm. created for students with learning differences. I think there's more awareness now of learning differences, which is sort of, I think, putting the pressure on to mm-hmm. create more opportunities for those kids. So I definitely enjoy working with neurodiverse kids, especially mm-hmm. having one of my own. And honestly, I'm also neurodivergent myself. Mm-hmm. So I get it on a personal level, as well as from having a kid and working with those kids.
And I do think things have changed recently. You know, I do think there's a lot more opportunities and a lot more, you know, schools that will have different types of programs. So I totally agree that it's really important to do your research and look at what different schools offer. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So go ahead, Wife Vicky.
Well, what were you say? We could keep going and going
we
and going.
Could, but eventually we'll need to stop.
I think a couple of last questions. And one is, I mean, you've covered so much, but in terms of college counseling and that, and your book, and getting real to get in, and all of that. If you had one sort of bottom line message for parents around this whole process, which can be so consuming and so stressful, what would you tell parents to keep in mind through this whole thing?
We're putting you on the spot.
Yes,
now.
An easy question.
Sure. Be a facilitator, not a driver of your child's process.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
I'm applauding over here.
passenger seat, not the driver's seat. Yeah.
Right. Well, I think providing that, it's more of that, providing that structure, providing mm-hmm. them with structure, providing them with support, but not making the goal about you.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah.
Right.
The students are working to individuate, and we need to do a little bit of that ourselves to pull back a little bit.
Yeah. And I have one very last question. We tend to ask people we interview about books that they like, besides your own book, books that you might want to recommend to families and students. Anything come to mind?
Well, I always have to default to Adam Grant, who was interviewed in the book. He has so many wonderful books. His most recent one is Think Again, Give and Take. I love anything by Adam Grant, and he's just such a he's a wonderful person, and he's a wonderful thinker. And so I love anything by Adam Grant. I love books by Dori Clark. She's another person that's profiled in the book who I admire. And her most recent book is called The Long Game. And it's about, just knowing that the little actions that we take, while they might be challenging, they really add up to getting to where we want to go. I'd say Laura Gassner Odding. She has a great book called Limitless. That's another author that I know and admire.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm writing all this down.
I know. One of the downfalls of interviewing a lot of different people and asking them for book recommendations is we're getting all of these book recommendations. And I think it's so fascinating the way, everyone approaches things from different mm-hmm. angles. And so the perspectives are different, and these books lead you in this way, and these books lead you in another way. And it's fascinating.
Right. If I have to boil down my taste in books, it's like, nonfiction personal development with a professional edge to them. So that's my sweet spot.
Yeah. And, those are also the kinds of books that are helpful for students to look at and for parents to think about, you know, how to help their kids and make suggestions. So that's wonderful. Thank you. And then of course, also on that list is Get Real and Get In by Dr. Aviva Leggett. And we're so glad that you took time to be with us today. And we're going to link to your book, and we'll also link to these others that you've recommended in the show notes. And if anyone wants to get in touch with you or investigate Ivy Insight, what's the best way for them to do that?
Thanks. You can go to ivyinsight.com. You can see about our programs there, and you can fill out our form and get notified about our newest webinars and resources.
Okay, great. So
fabulous.
Thank you so much for taking time. And I know that this is going to be very, really, really helpful to a lot of parents and their students.
Thanks again.
Thanks. We hope that this conversation with Dr. Aviva Leggett was helpful to you if you're starting the admissions process, or you have a student who's starting to think about how to select schools, how to get ready. She had so much to share from her work as a college counselor and also from her book, Get Real and Get In. So please, if you have friends who are about to start this process along about the same time, share this information, send them the podcast, and we hope that they will join us too. If you haven't done so, consider subscribing to the podcast wherever you like to listen to podcasts. And if you have an extra moment and could leave us a review or a rating, those are the kinds of things that help other people find the podcast, and we'd really appreciate that. So thank you for joining us. Feel free to go to the College Parent Central website, collegeparentcentral.com, and you can find the show notes there. We're going to list Dr. Leggett's book and a couple of the other books that she mentioned in this interview. So those are the show notes on the website. So thanks again for being with us all the way to the end. And until next time.
See you later.